You're listening to TASH Amplified, a podcast that seeks to transform research and experience concerning inclusion and equity for people with disabilities into solutions people can use in their everyday lives. Today we are talking with Carol Shaw, an assistant professor of special education and disability policy at Virginia Commonwealth University and the director of technical assistance for the Virginia Commonwealth University Autism Center for Excellence. We discuss her article, Employees with Autism Spectrum Disorder Achieving Long-Term Employment Success, a retrospective review of employment retention and intervention. It is one of a collection of articles in the September 2018 special issue of Research and Practice for Persons with Severe Disabilities, dedicated to critical issues in employment of persons with severe disabilities. She is a co-author along with Valerie Brook, Alyssa Molinelli-Brook, Paul Wayman, Jennifer McDonough, Catherine Thompson, and Jane Smith. Professor Shaw talks about her study, but throughout addresses the best practices, challenges, and future direction of the broad issue of employment for people with disabilities. Professor Carol Shaw, please introduce yourself for our listeners. How did you come to work with people with autism, and what are your areas of research?
The first part of your question is interesting. How did I come to work with people with autism? When I was in high school, actually, I hate to go back that far, but I became interested by doing a paper on children with autism. This was the late 70s, so not very much was known, but I was very intrigued. And that led me to a career in special education as I went through college. Interestingly, from that paper, I always had an interest in working with individuals with autism. And so through my college experiences and through my internships and my student teaching, I selected to work with children with autism. At the time in the 70s, that was a really rare thing. There weren't very many people with autism identified, but it became kind of an interest of mine at that point. Moving forward to my research interests, at this point, I'm very interested in figuring out ways to help individuals with autism achieve the life that they want to live, mainly through employment. As we transition from school-age individuals to young adults, one of the major tasks that we have before us is to identify who we are by our own career. If you think back to my story that I just told, my transition was about figuring out where my passions were and what I wanted to do. And that's essentially what we want to have happen for people with autism. Rather than encountering a point in their life where everything stops and they have to wait for services, what I'm really interested in figuring out is how do we help people with autism live the lives that they dream of and acquire the same kinds of experiences that their peers without disabilities do. And that includes finding a job, eventually finding a career that really floats their boat and allows them to be important and contributing members to their community. And so that's really been my interest for at least the past 20 or 30 years now.
Tell us about your study in the current issue of Research and Practice for Persons with Severe Disabilities.
We've been studying how to help individuals gain and maintain employment for about the past 10 years. What we haven't really looked at yet, and an area around which there's almost no literature whatsoever, is this concept of retention. It's not enough to just get a job. You need to keep that job and even potentially advance either in that job or in a similar job. And so the purpose of this study was to go back and look at all of the individuals that we've supported through our supported employment vendor, Business Connections, and to find out what is the retention rate, what is the advancement rate, and how many of those people who acquired employment are no longer working. We really wanted to know what does this look like over time for individuals with autism. And so this was a retrospective study where we went back and we looked at the records that we had on, I think it was about 130-some people who sought employment. Of those individuals, 104 gained employment, and they gained employment in 126 different jobs. And so as a retrospective study, It doesn't rise to the level of a randomized clinical trial, but for the kind of data that we were looking at, this is a really good match because we're looking at individuals over years of time and what are their support needs? How do we provide them with support? And do those support needs change over time? So that was really the purpose of the study. We found that, first of all, individuals with autism spectrum disorders can and do work in competitive integrated employment. And for us, competitive integrated employment is a job that anyone else in the world might get. We are not looking at sheltered employment. We are not looking at enclaves. We are not looking at other support models where individuals with autism work with peers with autism and have, you know, constant support. We really were looking at a job that anybody in the world might get. And so when we developed this study and we began to look retrospectively at those individuals, what we found is that there is a very high retention rate that employees with autism spectrum disorder who acquire and maintain employment in a field that capitalizes on their strengths retain those jobs at a very high rate. We also found that their support needs over time change in that they generally over time require less support. And we can talk about that more in a second. I think another important finding from the study is that these individuals, generally speaking, acquire employment through a process that we refer to as customized employment. The majority of the individuals here, their jobs were developed and tailored to their strengths. And I think that's a really important point when we think about individuals with autism. And if we compare an open market job to the skill sets that individuals with autism might bring to that job. So many of our jobs in our wider world are based on and include a tremendous amount of social interaction. What we find with individuals with autism is that social interaction is particularly difficult. One of the primary characteristics of autism is difficulty in managing and maintaining social interaction. And while individuals with autism are just like us and they crave friends and they crave interaction with others, having that be a standard part of their job frequently results in challenges. For example, one young man that we were supporting had difficulty understanding why he couldn't yell at customers who didn't understand what he was saying. And while that seems simple enough to you and I, to him, if somebody was breaking the rules or somebody wasn't listening, that was something that needed correction. And so what we work on when we customized jobs is to find jobs where the person gets to display their strengths without being hampered or set back by the aspects of their disability that make it difficult for them. An example, a really good example of a customized job is a young man who got a job in a hospital. He's a very organized, very visually focused young man. And his job is to organize a hospital pharmacy. And when you think about that, you might think of your average community pharmacy. If you go to, CVS or Rite Aid or something like that. And if you kind of peer behind the pharmacist, you'll see maybe about 5 or 6 shelves. Maybe those shelves are at most 5 to 6 feet high. And they have bottles and the pharmacists fill prescriptions from those bottles. Well, a hospital pharmacy is far, far more complex than that. First of all, there aren't bottles. There are individually bubble-packed medicines. Secondly, those individually bubble-packed medicines each have expiration dates. Thirdly, a hospital pharmacy has far more unique and different medicines than any other pharmacy that you might walk into in your community off the street. And then finally, when the pharmacists are pulling meds and then putting meds back, those expiration dates get mixed up, and sometimes even medicines get put into the wrong bins. Because if you're putting a small white pill in a bin with 20, 30, 40 other small white pills, and right next to it is another bin with 30 or 40 small white pills, it's likely that you might get mixed up. So this young man's job is to go through that pharmacy and to pull every single medicine that is out of date to make sure that the medicines that are in there are front dated with the ones soonest to expire to the front. And then finally, to make sure that the medicines are all placed in the proper bin. A pharmacist who's running quickly to fill multiple orders doesn't necessarily have the time to do that. But this young man with autism is so visually focused and so organized in the way he carries out his job. This was a perfect match. And if you think about this concept of all of these medicines being individually bubble packed, you're talking about millions of individual pills that he goes through the pharmacy once a month and makes sure is in order. As a result of his strength in doing this job, that pharmacy has reduced medication errors by more than 50%. A medication error is not just that a person misses a medication that they were supposed to get. A medication error includes the person getting the wrong medication or the person getting a medication that's out of date. And because he's now there organizing that pharmacy is now running more efficiently than it ever did. When I talk about social interaction and social skills, if you and I, who like to talk about things, especially on Monday morning, were in that pharmacy, somebody might walk by and say to me, "Hey, did you see the game over the weekend?" Whatever game it was. And I might stop and turn around and talk with them and either complain or commiserate or celebrate. When I turned back around, it's likely that that social interaction might have pulled my focus, and now I had to reorganize myself. If you walk by this young man and he's working and you say, "Hey, how about that game?" He's going to say pretty abruptly, "Working right now, can't talk." Because he's very focused and he can do one thing at a time and he's not socially focused. So his attention is not pulled by every single person that walks by him. His attention is fully focused on making sure that those meds are in proper order. And so he stays pretty focused. And so that's an example of a customized job that was made for him. He's also a young man, and this is another aspect of the work that we do, who requires quite a bit of movement. If he doesn't move enough in his day, he's going to start hopping about and jumping and maybe even flapping his arms. And so another aspect of work that he took on for himself was to deliver IV infusion meds to the outpatient IV infusion center. This job was previously completed by a pharmacy technician or a pharmacist themselves, which resulted in that job being completed whenever the pharmacist or pharmacy tech had a spare minute. Now that this young man is completing that job, he can stop what he's doing. He marks his place in the pharmacy where he's working. He delivers the med. It gives him a lot of movement. It increases it decreases the amount of time that outpatients are waiting for their infusions. And he's really efficient at completing that job as well. And so that's an example in this study where we found that individuals actually increase their ability to take on additional tasks and to become more independent at their jobs. And so that's an example of customized employment, where we look at the person and their strengths. We match that to a business need, and we're essentially looking at for that match made in heaven. A business has a need of something to be done and doesn't quite have the people to do it. A person with autism has the skill to do that job, and then we complete that match.
One of the most interesting findings in your study is the anomaly around 6 months, that the level of support required by employees with disabilities temporarily rises. But when you looked into this, the explanation was pretty interesting. Could you tell us about what you found there?
Yeah, we found two things. You're exactly right. That 6 month point was interesting. And I have to say, being a responsible researcher, that this is one study, and we haven't confirmed that with additional studies, and we do intend to continue to follow this area of research. But In this case, when we looked into what was happening at 6 months, we found two possible explanations. First of all, a lot of individuals actually had mastered their job to the point where they needed more tasks, and the job, the employer needed them to do more tasks. So some of what happened at 6 months was that people were getting trained in additional tasks, or they were advancing actually in their careers. The second thing that happened was that sometimes the tolerance of coworkers got a little stressed at the 6 month point. And so this is the other side of what happened. So the positive side is that people actually got increased responsibilities at work and needed retraining. The other side of that is that sometimes what happens when people with autism work, they may be a little idiosyncratic. And idiosyncratic includes, you know, like one person absolutely hates parties because it's a change in their routine. And so whenever there was a party at work for someone, like you're celebrating a birthday or you're holding a baby shower or those kind of events that people hold at work, he would get very upset. And his coworkers could tolerate that for about 6 months. At about the 6 month point, the coworkers needed support to understand how best to interact with him around those kinds of events. And so sometimes that 6 month point was, how do we help the coworkers understand this person, and how do we help them gain some strategies so that they're better able to support the individual and be a natural support in that environment?
Early on in the article, you mentioned career advancement. One of the projects we are working on at TASH is for people with disabilities not to have just jobs, but careers. Can you tell us more about what careers for people with disabilities look like?
This study is early, but what we're finding is that career advancement happens around those strength areas. And so what we're seeing is people with autism actually do advance by taking on more responsibility at their jobs, by being given more responsibility. And while that career advancement may not look like traditional career advancement, so traditionally we think of career advancement where you move from the person doing the job to the person supervising others doing the job. That's traditional career advancement. For individuals with autism, that may not be what career advancement looks like. Instead, career advancement for individuals with autism looks more like individuals taking on more responsibility for more tasks, maybe heading up a project to set up a new database and input new information, or maybe being assigned a task that is temporary but important. Another young man that we supported worked in a printing shop for a large hospital, and his job was to process print and mail items, but also to put together training manuals. And so career advancement for him became the opportunity to actually head up their manual construction department, where he's not supervising others in doing this, but he's actually taking on and organizing the entire production and development of manuals. And he lays out the task so others can help him, but other people are actually supervising those employees. And so career advancement doesn't necessarily look the same as it might for employees for whom social skills are a big deal. You know, when you think about typical career advancement, as I said, this idea of being able to supervise others might not be in the wheelhouse of a person with autism, but certainly leading a project from initiation to completion is well within the skills of someone with autism who might see that as an option for them.
So you mentioned that this is one of the only studies on job retention. What do we know about retention? What remains to be learned? What do we need to do to have better outcomes in employment for people with disabilities?
Three great questions. Okay, so what we know about retention at this point, based on our study, is that These group of individuals, once they acquire employment, are really highly valued employees. The individuals that we work with have a perspective and complete tasks very, very thoroughly. And in many cases, with more detail and with more focus than their peers without disabilities. And so a person with autism really becomes a valued coworker in employment. And it's that diversity of the way that a person with autism might solve a problem that makes them unique in the workplace. So if I'm a person without autism, I frequently rely on my social skills to solve problems. That is, I talk to other people, I get other people's opinions, I work really hard, but my work almost always has to involve some level of social interaction with others. If I'm a person with autism, I might have less of that social interaction, but my problem-solving skills are going to be unique and different. And it's that different point of view that really rounds out employment. Secondly, we found with regard to retention, that employees who work, who are co-workers and supervisors of individuals with autism, report at this point, and this is preliminary, but we're hearing that people report higher morale, that they're actually really enjoying being a co-worker of a person with autism, and that that's something that really adds to their sense of accomplishment, their sense of valuing their work, and their sense of working together as a team. Diversity in it, in the workplace actually improves morale rather than becoming a problem for the workplace. And that when people solve problems together with their peers with disabilities, that that's a pride for the entire team. And so we're finding that coworkers really like being coworkers with individuals with autism. We're also finding that it's really important that we think about alternative ways to help people enter work. If the average person with autism with fairly significant impact on their social communication skills may not interview well. For example, one of our guys was guileless and honest to a fault. And so he happened to have been an intern where he eventually got his job. While he was interning, he demonstrated that he was a really good employee and he worked really hard and the business valued him and wanted to hire him. But they required him to sit for an interview. And so during the interview, his future employer asked him, "You've been here in an internship for about 6 or 7 months now. What would you say you really like about our place of work?" And this young man with autism stopped, thought for a long time, considered the question carefully, and then looked the interviewer right in the eye and without any sense of irony said, "Lunch. I really like lunch here." If you didn't know that young man, if you didn't know his quality of work, and you were interviewing him cold, what you might come away with from that interview is that dude is really odd. But if you know him and you know that he's guileless, he's honest to a fault, he'll work hard, harder in some cases than anybody else on the job, you're going to have a different perspective of that answer. And so what we're learning about helping people acquire employment and get better employment outcomes is we need to rethink the interview process. Rather than relying entirely on what someone says about how they work, we're beginning to ask employers to consider giving someone the opportunity to show what they can do in a workplace. Secondly, we've actually worked with some individuals to develop videos of themselves working, and we provide video resumes, so that individuals can see the individual working, so that employers can see the individual working and get a real sense of who this person is as a worker. And so we really need to rethink how we hire people. As a person who interviews people and tries to hire people, one of the things that we who interview people have learned is that there is no good way to hire an employee. There is no reliable 100% guaranteed way for me to actually find out how someone will complete their job just by talking to them. And so as we learn new interviewing ways to support individuals with autism, specifically, and individuals with disabilities generally, we're actually helping the wider world figure out ways to hire employees that will complete the job well. If we only rely on social skills, I think we're going to be misled in terms of how we can go about hiring people.
If you were a person with a disability or a family member of a transition age youth, where would you begin thinking about the path to a career, and where would you look?
So, again, an excellent question. We've learned so much in probably about the past 10 to 15 years about this idea of a pathway to employment when individuals move from school to adulthood. And we really have to think carefully about that transition, but also carefully about the experiences in high school that prompt that transition. One thing that we are now very firm on is that individuals with disabilities should either work in part-time jobs or have internships where they learn to work in part-time jobs with support while they're in high school. What we're finding is that that is a major predictor of work after high school. We have individuals who we, in this study, who required a tremendous amount of support and yet continue to be able to be employed long-term. These are individuals who have a very difficult time communicating with words. Individuals with behavioral challenges who use their behavior to communicate how things are going with them. And we also have supported individuals who present numerous challenges around just everyday organization, how they get to work, how they know it's time for lunch, how they take breaks. Those kind of challenges are all things that we can teach people to do. But unless the individual has the opportunity to learn that while they're in high school, when they have entitlement, it's going to be much easier on the other end to make the case that they can work if they've already worked. So one pathway is work or internships in high school. A second pathway actually is college. There are so many college programs now that serve individuals with developmental disabilities. One of the most famous actually is here in Virginia, and it's called George Mason Life. And it's a college program where people with significant disabilities take classes with peers without disabilities. They might audit those classes or they might fully participate depending upon their ability level. But they also have the college experience. They learn to live independently. They learn to clean a dorm room, which is a task that we probably could teach all college kids. They learn to get around, take buses. They learn how to manage their social lives while on college campuses. They rush sororities and fraternities. They join social clubs. They engage in all the things that college students engage in. And so we found that that actually also is a predictor that someone who has had a college experience will likely have employment when they graduate from college. Finally, I think that this is the most important point. We really need to refocus all of the way that we think about people with disabilities. Through elementary school and middle school, we tend to focus on the dis part of disabilities, those things that the individual with a disability cannot do. And we tend to look at an individual with a disability as someone who we have to fix by either teaching them or helping them bypass those skill areas where they need assistance. By the time they get to high school, we have to refocus away from the disabilities and focus more on the ability. What we found with many of our individuals with ASD in particular, some of them had pretty severe behavioral challenges in high school, But when we refocused on what they did well, those behavior challenges all but disappeared, because what we were no longer asking them to do things that were very, very hard for them. Instead, we were asking them to do things that they like to do. You know, when I went through high school, I was terrible at physics. It was one of the few courses in my high school career that I didn't do well in. And I didn't think to myself at that time, geez, I'm really bad at physics. Maybe I ought to be a physicist until I master it. No one leaves high school thinking, I better work on my weaknesses so that I can be the best at them I can be. Everyone leaves high school thinking, here are the things that I like to do and I'm good at. Let me look for careers that will let me do those things. And that's really what we have to do with people with disabilities. We really have to shift from what they can't do and trying to teach them how to do that to what they do well and enjoy doing, and find ways for them to do that in a job or career. And so those are the three things that I would say. If I had a family member with a disability, or if I were the parent of a person with a disability, one, have them work while they're in high school, or have them complete internships while they're in high school. Two, if it matches your family, your budget, and the student and the individual's desires, seek out college. And then three, really shift from focusing on disability to ability. Really shift from focusing on what's hard for me to what I really like to do.
So you're not exclusively a researcher. You do a number of things in support of employment for people with disabilities. Tell us a little bit about some of those activities.
Well, yes, it's true. I guess you can tell from my discussion that I also really directly support individuals in our projects. And mainly what I do is I provide behavioral consultation and behavioral support. And this is an area that I think nationwide, in terms of policy, we really have to address. People with disabilities are not the only individuals who work and have behavior problems. And yet, the workplace tolerates all kind of behavioral problems. People with disabilities, in fact, have sometimes have behavioral problems that are entirely, we're entirely able to address them through the use of positive behavior supports and through the use of environmental arrangement. And what we really need to do from a policy perspective is increase access to those behavioral supports that really help individuals complete their job while learning to self-monitor their own behavior. And so the one area that I do a lot of in working with our team and in assisting our team in helping people with employment is I focus in on how do we change behaviors and how do we help individuals who display behavior problems figure out what's going on. I'll give you one more story. There was one young woman who we were working with who had very, very limited literacy skills. She didn't really read. She had no real writing skill. She was an excellent worker, but had difficulty organizing her work. And so she also had very little numeracy skill. So she didn't tell time. She wasn't able to count really or use any kind of number system to assist her. And so when you think about someone who's having difficulty organizing their day, you immediately think, oh, we need to develop a schedule for her that she can follow. But then you add into that, she doesn't read, and she doesn't tell time, and she doesn't really fully understand numbers. And so that makes that kind of hard, right? Because you can't write out a schedule for her. And so we developed a picture schedule. Now, on top of that, her days varied by task. And so it made it hard for us to think of, okay, she needs a consistent schedule, but she needs to do different things on Tuesday than she does on Monday, and different things on Wednesday, and different things on Thursday. And so what we developed with her, and she fully participated, was a color coding system, where rather than it being Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, that she couldn't read, it was orange, pink, and blue. And she would pull a picture schedule based on the color of the day. We did use an iPod for her, but she was working again. A lot of these jobs are in hospitals, and she was working in an area that required sterile procedures, and you're not allowed to have like a device, like a cell phone or an iPod or an iPhone, because if you ever did a swab and measured the germs on your phone, you would really, really be disgusted. So we had sterilization problems that we had to deal with that she couldn't have an electronic device. If she could have an electronic device, we certainly would have done that for her, but because of the nature of her job, she wasn't able to have an electronic device. Nevertheless, we were able to devise a system for her that reduced her avoidance behaviors and increased her success at work. And she ended up being very successfully employed for a long time.
So, what are the important takeaways from your study for job placement support and support professionals?
I think the important takeaways are this. Collaborate with the business. And when I say that, what I mean is, we talked earlier about customized employment. When you're a support professional for someone who's working, you have to do two things. You have to advocate for the individual you're supporting, and you have to advocate that the job is getting their business need met. It helps no one to have somebody have a job that is, for lack of a better term, a token job, like they're everybody's friend. You know, nobody wants to, I won't say nobody, but being a Walmart greeter while an honorable position is not a career. And so if we're really talking about careers and not just jobs, we have to think beyond token positions. And so we really want to advocate both for the person and for the business to get their needs met in the context of employment. We have to really be aware of that. Number two, ask for help, especially around challenging behaviors. There's so much that we can do with environmental arrangement to help people be more successful at work. And then number three, look for ways to support the person that will eventually be taken over by the natural supports in the area. So imagine the person without you and look around the environment and look for those natural supports that exist on the job and will be there for the person long beyond the time that you're there with them.
Professor Shaw, thank you very much for your contribution to RPSD, and thank you for taking the time to talk with us today about that and bring it to a wider audience.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to TASH Amplified. For more about the series, including show notes, links to articles discussed, a complete transcript, and a schedule of episodes, visit tash.org/amplified. You can subscribe through iTunes or your favorite Android podcast app to have the series delivered automatically to your device so you never miss an episode. If you enjoyed today's episode, please share it with your friends and on your social networks. Today we discussed research from the current special issue of Research and Practice for Persons with Severe Disabilities, a special issue dedicated to critical issues in the employment of persons with severe disabilities. The current issue, as well as the complete archive of 40 years of RPSD, is one of the benefits of TASH membership. You can learn more about RPSD at the publisher website, journals.sagepub.com/home/RPS. For more on TASH's employment-related work, visit our Yes Center website at www.yestoemployment.org. You can learn more about Carol Shaw and the Virginia Commonwealth University Autism Center for Excellence at vcuautismcenter.org. TASH is a values and research-based advocacy association with an over 40-year record advocating for the rights of people with disabilities. TASH is a coalition that unites people with disabilities, researchers, educators, service providers, family members, and others in the cause of guaranteeing that people with disabilities are able to participate in all aspects of life. In addition to Research and Practice for Persons with Severe Disabilities, we offer a popular magazine, Connections, local chapters covering 18 states, a series of webinars and regional conferences, and our annual conference. The theme for our 2018 annual conference is Be Creative, Innovative Solutions for an Inclusive Life. The conference will be in Portland, Oregon from November 28th through the 30th and will feature about 1,000 attendees and 300 presentations by researchers, self-advocates, family members, educators, agency personnel, and other experts and advocates. You can learn more and register for the conference at tash.org/conference2018. You can receive updates from TASH on this podcast and our other activities by following us on Facebook or on Twitter at TASHTweet. Music for TASH Amplified is an original composition and performance by Sunny Sefirati, the co-director and autistic self-advocacy mentor at The Musical Autist. You can learn more about The Musical Autist at www.themusicalautist.org. This has been a sample of the colleagues and conversations available through TASH. It is only because of the excellent work that our members do that we can bring you this information. For more resources such as this and to become a member, visit tash.org/join. We'll hear from another outstanding advocate again soon.